Hello, hello. Welcome to Ballyhoo Fiber Emporium, a podcast for fiber artists and producers. I'm your host, Madeline Rosenberg, and today I will be joined by Natasha Lady Snyder of the Unplanned Peacock Studio. She's our first indie dyer that we're having on, and I'm so pleased. Stick around at the end. We're going to have instructions for a giveaway. Natasha is donating one of her beautiful skeins of yarn, so find out how you can win that. Well, Natasha, let's start from the top.
Okay.
Tell me a little bit about your fiber background, like most of us, like all of us. You didn't set out to be an indie dyer.
No, but I do have a costuming degree mm-hmm. from the University of Cincinnati. So I did costumes and wigs for a lot of years professionally. But then it just wasn't really working out for me to work in the theater. And my husband traveled for a living. And if you're in the theater, you have to really travel a lot.
Right.
And so it wasn't going to work for us to do that, to have us both be traveling all the time. I changed my profession around a little bit. But then when we moved out to Virginia, I got a farm on purpose, obviously. Just randomly got a farm and sheep. And then I got really heavily into knitting, as you do when you get sheep.
Right.
And then I was like, well, I could probably apply my costuming background to this. So I started to dye and it kind of went crazy from there. And now I'm traveling all the time anyways, so doing the shows. So yeah, so it's been fun. I really love it. You know, I love my clients. They're fantastic. It's always fun to be around fiber people and creative people of all different kinds.
Do you use your costuming background to design patterns for your own yarn?
Well, I have, but it's extremely time consuming, and I really, my time is better spent, I think, to try to work with other pattern designers and kind of support them. I mean, I've done maybe 10 patterns or so, you know, and I enjoy it, but it's very time consuming, and I'd rather let people who are just going to focus on that work on that. And then, you know, I do a lot of dyeing special colorways for designers and putting together kits for designers. And I've done a lot of mystery knit alongs with designers where we pick, you know, design certain colors of yarn that have, like, our last one that we did was one full skein and then 8 half skeins. So it's this huge Fair Isle shawl, and they didn't know what they were going to get themselves into when they bought the kit because it was a mystery. So it was a lot of fun. So I do a lot of that kind of stuff, and I really enjoy working with the designers.
I'm enjoying your disco combinations.
Yeah, that's a new one. That one's a secret. I can't talk about that.
Okay. So we'll mention that you have like a Soul Train solid gold thing going on.
Yeah, and that's actually from the designer. I can say this. It's going to be in the Criminal Knits Ravelry group in April, and it's a mystery knit along.
So everybody go sign up.
Yeah, and it's a sock. So it's a relatively inexpensive way to get a kit because it's only 2 half skeins. So it's not like super expensive. Like usually the big ones are like $100. This one's, I think, 28 and 31 or something like that. 32.
Nice.
I can't remember what I pressed it. Yeah. So it's not that expensive, but really cool, fun colorways and fun project.
I hope they're knee high. Because I see a lot of girls in short shorts showing off their hand knit socks with like 4 wheel roller skates on.
It'd be super fun. Yeah. But I can't tell you anything about the design because I've seen it, and I will try not to let any secrets out.
Some big Farrah Fawcett wings.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Glitter in your hair.
You actually started business the same year I got sheep. How fun is that?
Cool.
Yeah.
What kind of sheep do you have?
I have Icelandics and Shetlands primarily.
Yeah, we have Icelandics. Yeah. I love the Icelandics. They're so much personality.
Yeah. They're a little bit more independent than the Shetlands, for sure.
How do they get along with each other?
Oh, they're fine. They breed with each other. They get along with each other. Do you sell livestock, or you just keep them for the fiber?
Honestly, at this point, we just keep them as pets. We do shear them, and we sell the fleeces if people want them. And I sell a little bit of processed fleece off my website, but to be honest with you, we don't have that many sheep. We've only got 14. So we're not even breeding them right now because with the shows, I'm so busy. I can't be home all the time to take care of the lambs, and I can't really lay that on my husband.
Right.
So, I mean, he will do it, but, you know, he's got a full-time job too, so it's not very fair. We just keep them as pets, very expensive pets. I enjoy their wool, and we do, and like I said, I do dye some of it. I do sell some of it on my website, but we don't get tons of it processed or anything.
Making you happy is his full-time job.
Yeah, right. <Tell him that. laughs>
And if you want to hold a lamb, well, then he better be home to take care of it.
He's delivered them, he's pulled them, he's done the whole thing. So, I mean, he's done a good job with all of that. It's just not a good situation. I have to leave when there's babies coming. So we just have tried not to breed, although we did have one ram exposure. So we'll just see if he got anybody pregnant. He
Surprise.
Got through the fifth. Yeah, we'll see.
Well, you do have a history of unplanned animals.
Yeah, exactly. We have plenty of that going on here.
Let's explain your name to people.
When we first got the farm, the very first spring, we kept hearing this really bizarre noise. And I was like, I don't understand what that is. It's like somebody strangling a cat in our yard every night. And I couldn't figure out what kind of bird it was. And then all of a sudden, I went outside one day and we had pretty weedy areas. And this blue head stuck up out of the weeds. That was our peacock. He stayed there. He moved in and just stayed. So he lasted, I think, 5 or 7 years. I'm not sure exactly. And then something ate him, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
We have 3 new ones now, so they're happy and healthy. We tried getting him a buddy, which was a female, but she would not stay put. So, because we just have them ranging. And the only reason he got caught was because it was, like, super rainy for, like, days, and he got caught. He got cornered or something in the corner of a shed. Because otherwise, they're up in the trees, so they just are kind of wild, even though they all stay here and we feed them.
Right.
That female kind of took off, and we don't know what happened to her. But then, and then that was the end of him, too. That was a sad day,
he
I gotta tell you.
He died of a broken heart.
No, broken hearts don't end up with feathers everywhere.
That's so sad. Why are we laughing?
We were heartbroken. It was horrible. But, you know, there's coyotes and foxes and all kinds of things out here. But anyway, we have 3 now that we got as babies, or young peacocks anyway. They're all happy. We have a white one now, which that's fun. Ooh. He's beautiful. And a beautiful blue one, and the female's spotted.
Do you ever dye the feathers?
I've never tried that, actually. I should try that with the white one. That would be really cool.
Yeah. Do you spin with them at all?
I have had friends who've done that. I haven't tried it myself. She loved, loved, loved that. My friend who did that. I should try dyeing the white ones. He's only this year. This is the first year he's had a substantially long tail.
Because he's
like 3 now. Because they don't get a really long tail for quite a few years.
Right.
So
your Icelandics are so cute, by the way.
They are adorable. They are just so cute. Icelandic sheep have tons of personality, as you know. And they're just the most beautiful sheep, I think. Of course, Shetlands are a close second. They pretty much look alike. They're just smaller. They're all so cute.
I think the Icelandic lambs are cuter, though, because they come out with these really long legs and skinny, tiny, itty-bitty bodies, and then this mane of wool around their necks.
They're just so cute. I really do miss having lambs. I loved having lambs. They're so cute.
I'll send some to sleepaway camp.
Yeah, okay.
You can raise them upright and then bring them back.
Aww. I would love to have more lambs.
You sell a variety of things, not just hand-dyed yarns.
That
Your
is true.
Shawl pins in particular are gorgeous.
Oh, I don't make those. I have a friend who's a blacksmith, and all he does is, him and his wife and his daughter, all they do is have this blacksmith shop, and they make them. So they're all handmade. They're made out of stainless steel, and, you know, you're supporting another little family business, so that's always nice.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, once you buy one, you're going to have it for the rest of your life. It's well worth it. They're very cool.
I saw you at a wool gathering a couple years ago. And, I mean, the name grabbed me because I also had an unplanned peacock at the time. And then had, you know, made that decision in my life that I was ready to have a planned peacock, which is the one who's running amok. So that hasn't worked out too well for me. Some of us are meant to be peacock parents, others not so much. But your booth is just visually stunning.
Thanks. I put a lot of work into it.
I think it's better than your website. Because I've been through your catalog and it's like, oh yeah, that looks nice. But when you see Natasha's booth in person, it's just like, oh, rainbow.
Yeah, well, we don't travel light to shows. Yeah, we try to like have a variety and we try to have something that everybody will like. So whether you like pastels or whether you like really rich colors or whatever. We try to aim to please. And we have everything from, like, laceway up to, like, super bulky. I like knitting with a variety of yarn, so I assume other people do as well.
Are you a hand spinner?
I do spin, yes.
Awesome.
I don't spin as much as I should or would like to, but yeah, I do enjoy spinning a lot. And I really enjoy spinning wheels. I'm kind of addicted to them. I have a lot of antique spinning wheels.
I had a dream. I have a little, it's a minstrel wheel from the 1800s.
Cool.
It's in working condition. But I had a dream the other night that some guy came to my house and told me that I didn't know how to use it. And like I needed a different bobbin or something, and he just happened to have one, and then he spun this. It was very like, I don't know, like Rumpelstiltskin. It was very weird.
It would have been really handy if he had taught you how to spin into gold.
Right. I have a feeling he would have taken all the gold with him.
Yeah, ooh. Probably.
So you don't have Basil anymore?
No.
Oh. I just found the page with all the pictures. Now I'm excited.
Right now, our main ram is named Gimel. He is not on there. He is his son, though, so he looks exactly the same, except he's got slightly different horns. But otherwise, he looks exactly the same. And he's frustrated because we haven't let him get with the girls.
They're so precious. Is Epsilon, is she actually polled?
Yes, we have about half polled and half not polled.
Really?
Yeah, and actually, at this point, we've got more polled. I could talk to you about sheep all day, but I don't know if your listeners want to hear about sheep all day.
Oh, yeah, they're pretty sheep-obsessed.
Okay, good. So when we initially got our sheep, we got them from three different sources. And the one source, which is up in New York, had wonderful polled sheep. We got two pregnant ewes from them, and those sheep have been awesomely healthy. So we've been very, very happy with them and their descendants. And then our horn sheep come from a farmer that is no longer in business in Virginia and another farm in Virginia. They were more variable in health, mm-hmm. but Nancy's animals were very, very healthy. The other farms weren't so healthy, and we're really, really picky. We try really hard only to breed extremely healthy animals because in Virginia, we have horrible, horrible parasite issues here. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like Darwinism at the farm in that if they had any parasite problems at all, we wouldn't breed them anymore because we just didn't want to be taking care of an entire farm full of parasite-ridden animals. So what ended up happening was the polled line was phenomenal. So, you know, they just kept getting bred. And then we had bought in another polled ram. He was not parasite-resistant at all. He came from Michigan and he was bad, but his descendants were fine.
That came from the mother.
Yeah. You know, our number one criteria is health.
Yeah.
Because in Virginia, like in the South, if you can't resist the parasites, they're dead.
I honestly don't think that Icelandics belong in the Southeast at all. Or the Midwest, frankly.
Well, you know, honestly, since about the year 3 or 4, they've been fine. Our program of not breeding the bad ones has really worked. I mean, it really has. We warm them when they need it. We don't warm them on like a strict schedule because we think that breeds resistance.
It does. It definitely does.
We check them all. We warm them all when they look, when their eyelids look a little pale. But to be honest with you, we haven't had an animal die from parasitism or whatever you call it for a long, long time. I can't even remember the last one. It's been years. So I think the thing is you just have to pay super attention. I think the biggest problem with Icelandic sheep, and I can't speak to any other breeds because I don't have them, is that people get them because they're pretty and they might be pretty novice in shepherds, and then they just breed whatever they have. But that's just really a bad plan. I mean, because you're going to end up with a lot of smallish, sickly animals, you still have to be really cognizant about who you're breeding.
Right.
Not that I could say that because I'm like, oh, my ram just got in with my ewe, so I hope nobody's pregnant. But, you know, at this point, my flock is pretty healthy overall, and that ram is like beyond healthy, so he's never had a bad problem in his life. I'm not too worried about it, you know.
Well, part of it is knowing your operation too. I mean, yeah, I'm pretty sure that you could raise a super healthy flock of Icelandics if you wanted to be out there all the time. And I know people who routinely worm every month in this area because the parasites are so bad that they don't want to take a chance.
I mean, I don't want to judge anybody because you got to do what you got to do to keep your sheep alive. But if you're worming every single month, every single animal, I would seriously reassess because you're going to end up having complete parasite resistance.
Right. And you know? So basically the only way they're able to keep their animals alive is with worming.
Yeah, exactly.
they live on wormer.
That's only going to work for so long.
Right.
I think the minerals have a lot to do with how healthy they are. I think Icelandics have to have a lot more copper in their diet than other sheep, and that really helps with the wormers. A lot of people have gone to putting copper particle boluses in their sheep.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently that works really well. I haven't been able to do that myself. I've heard it works wonderfully. I hate to get too sheep nerdy to you. To people
do it. Like, it's my podcast is for fiber artists and producers. So this is anything we teach people is a good thing.
Well, there's another company out of Scotland that is putting out the sheep bolus of copper and other minerals that it looks really intriguing to me, but you have to order from Scotland. So I haven't actually done that yet, but I would imagine it probably works really well. I believe it's cobalt and copper. I have to look it up.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, if you want, I can email you the information later. A lot of Icelandic people have had really good luck with it, but like I said, you got to order from Scotland. So it does take a little bit of planning.
Right.
Get it.
Yeah, but that's awesome. The information that people still get, and that I had gotten until I started looking into it this year, was don't give them any copper, don't give them, and then it was kelp. Well, they need kelp and they won't live if they don't have kelp. Well, why? Because there's more copper in it.
The Icelandics, I mean, that is certainly not a blanket statement for all sheep, because yeah, most sheep can't have that much copper, but Icelandics are not like other sheep.
Right,
so.
The primitive breeds need it.
Exactly. Do the Shetlands need more copper?
Yeah.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me because of their dark fur. Because you can tell right away if they don't have enough copper because of their fur color, so their wool.
What do you mean?
Like, say if you have a black sheep,
mm-hmm.
that turns their if they are copper deficient, you'll see it right away in their fleeces, because their fleeces will turn like lighter gray and kind of turn wiry. Whereas if they have enough copper in their diet, they're going to stay really black.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Huh. So like, and if you start supplementing your sheep, your black sheep, now you can't tell in the white ones for obvious reasons,
right.
but like start supplementing your black sheep, you'll see a difference in their fleeces like almost immediately. You'll see a difference. Yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty clear that they need it if it's showing up that much in their fur.
Right. I mean, I had the horse mineral blocks and I rotational graze. So then the sheep would get into the horse pasture and just mow through the mineral block. And like, no, you can't have that one. That's not for you. It has copper in it. And then I started reading up on this and I was like, oh, never mind. Go nuts.
We give ours goat minerals because, you know, that way they're getting a little more copper into them.
Wow, you go that high?
Yeah. I mean, we don't.
Because goat minerals have more copper in them than like just the normal average, you know, all livestock block.
They don't tend to chow down on the minerals, I don't think, more than they really need to. Like, they're not mineral hogs.
Right.
If we put it in, like, one of those blocks, you know, like Tractor Supply sells, and they have, they're kind of minerals, but they're, like, meal base. It's pressed into a box, not block, not, like, the hog.
Oh, yeah, those tub things.
They're not tubs. They're still blocks, but they're not hard like a hard block.
Like, they're like the flock block, but they're for, like, sheep and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're soft. They're not, like, going to be hard on their teeth.
Yeah.
They really love those. I could see them overdosing on those if there weren't. Their blocks are relatively small by the time you get all those sheep onto it.
Right.
They're not getting all that much. We tend to get those if we feel like they're getting, like, really heat stressed in the summertime.
Oh, okay.
Or parasite stressed in the summertime. That seems to work. And
give those ones, like, right before lambing so that the moms are getting extra.
Yeah.
And then I just have I used to do the loose minerals because people say, oh, it's better for them and they can regulate it better and it doesn't hurt their teeth. But man, it rains once and it doesn't matter what it's in, it melts. And then they won't eat it.
It's hard. We have to keep those in the barn. And then the other thing we give ours is cobalt blocks. And they don't eat much of those, but they do eat them. So like, and I think that depends on where you're at, if you have enough cobalt in your soil.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel that has helped too. And I mean, one block will last like 2 years. So they're hardly eating it, but they do eat it. Cause you can, you know, you'll see it on their lips once in a while cause it's blue.
I also add DE, which is loose, but it doesn't matter if it gets rained on cause they can lick it anyway. And selenium sometimes we have to add.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do that too.
Yeah.
We've tried this selenium yeast, which works really well.
Mm-hmm.
And then you mix that in the minerals. But a lot of times if they're stressed, I'll just use like oral selenium gel.
What I started using when I had to treat overload of barber pole was the OTC horse jug, which is high in copper. But like you said, you know, there's been a lot of research that copper boluses will flush out a worm load. It's harsh on the worm load, but it's gentler on the sheep. So the amount of copper in the jug paste, I think, does the same thing.
When we have a really high worm load and we feel like they need more copper, we give them red cell. Is that the same type of thing?
Sort of, yeah. It's just a paste instead of the liquid. But they say, and I found it to be true, I can't remember where I read it, but there was a shepherdess who said she'll walk through the pasture with a tube and the animals that need it will come up to her.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I found it to be true. If they want it, like, they'll come up to sniff and see what's in your hands, but if they need something from it, they'll grab onto that tube.
Interesting.
Yeah. What else can we geek out on? This is fun.
Oh, I don't know. We added two donkeys to our farm.
What?
They're pretty fun. We really enjoy the donkeys.
Are they mini donkeys or big donkeys?
They're standard size donkeys. And they're super, super cute. So I have, like, no experience with the horses because I'm, like, highly, highly allergic to them. Mm-hmm. The donkeys I'm not allergic to, and they're so friendly and fun and cute and lovable. I just adore them. They're so great. They're cute. But the reason we got these guys was to be livestock guardians for us.
Okay,
so.
Yeah. Do you want to chat about that?
What, the livestock guardian issue? I have experience, but I only have experience with my donkeys. So it's hard to generalize from that because I'm certainly not any kind of a donkey expert. I feel like it's been working well, but it's also kind of like trying to prove a negative, right? So, right. Like, I feel like the male especially is extremely noisy. We have two, the neutered male and the female. Mm-hmm. I got the two donkeys from a farm that's local that has tons of horses and donkeys. And he was not castrated. I should have got him castrated, like, immediately because they can be really aggressive. And he was somewhat aggressive to the sheep. Not bad enough that he actually injured anybody, but if they were in his way, he would let them know. And they quickly learned to get away from him. But once we cut his balls off, pretty much solved that problem. He's much calmer now.
And were they raised with sheep before you got them?
I'm not so sure that this farm was all that great. For instance, the female, I mean, they have their horse farm and they had just a bunch of donkeys as well. And I don't think the donkeys got a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. I mean, the female was 5 years old and didn't even have a name. So
oh, sad.
I know they weren't mishandled. They came right around and were friendly. You know what I mean? It wasn't like beaten or anything, but I just don't think they got a lot of individual attention. And her hooves are really bad when we first got her. So I don't know how much farrier work they've had done, but they're great. And donkeys are so, if you like animal training, donkeys are so responsive to that. They're so smart. I come from an animal training background where I'm training like small animals. So I'm not used to the way people train horses. So we just went into it like we're going to clicker train these donkeys and it works great. They'll do anything you want for food. Sometimes people use a more aggressive style and, you know, donkeys, that's just a waste of your time because they're just going to hate you. And they're very, very smart. And once you teach them something one time, they will know it forever. So we just taught them to do stuff with a clicker and just like you would a dog or any other animal. Easy to train.
That's amazing.
So, I mean, I think our farrier thought we were crazy. It worked because the first time they fought over it. And then after that, they never fought again because they knew they were going to stand there and have treats fed to them like a slot machine. So,
but, so you know, who's really trained who here?
Yeah, well, yeah, but hey, I'm okay. They're not kicking the farrier in the chest. I'm good with that. So right. As far as running things off, I don't know because you really can't tell. I mean, you know, I haven't found like a dead coyote or anything, but they are noisy. And I think most animals would probably be scared of that, at least most wild animals, you know. Mm-hmm. So far, so good. And they've been nice with the sheep. I mean, the sheep, they've all learned to get along after the first couple of weeks and after the boys' balls got cut off. It's good. The only thing I can say about the donkeys is, man, they're expensive because we've got to pay for the farrier. That's a lot of money. And of course, extra hay and all that, which we expected, but we didn't really think about the fact that we'd have to get the farrier all the time.
Yeah, donkeys are notorious for having really bad feet. Basically, unless you walk them across concrete all the time.
Yeah. And, you know, we've kept on top of it and we've got a really nice farrier that's really good with the animals. So I'm appreciative of that. I just hadn't really like thought about that as hard as I should have when we got them, but we got them now. So you got to take care of them.
Right. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they wouldn't be happy if you separated them.
Well, I don't think so. They're pretty bonded.
And then there's all those Snapple caps that you have to buy for the clickers.
At this point, I think they pretty much just do what we tell them to do because we don't even barely use the clicker anymore. At this point. They're just like, okay, what do we have to do to get food?
Right.
They're pretty fun, though. They're so charming.
You have surprise guineas?
We had guineas. We don't have guineas any longer. Unfortunately, the guineas were really, really the dumbest animal I've ever had in my entire
life. They so are. All they do is scream like, I'm getting eaten now.
Oh my gosh, the saddest thing I've ever seen. Like, we had one that, like, went off and had all these chicks. Okay? So, and we didn't know this. We just thought she disappeared and, like, but she was off in the grass with chicks, right? And so one day she appears and there's just like this string of dead guinea chicks because like they don't even watch their own chicks. And oh, it's so sad. So we had to like go and try to find and rescue all the still alive guinea chicks. It's like she would take them through the creek. It was just horrible. It was so sad because they're so cute and they're babies. She just runs and they're all trying to run after her and they just can't because they're tiny.
And she doesn't go back and get them. She just keeps running.
So we had to try to collect them up and, you know, and then raise them in a box because she was obviously not going to. It was horrible. I'm like, how do these things even survive in the wild? Well, the reason they survive is because they have like 40 babies. I mean, they have so many chicks. I mean, even compared to chickens. And it's like the strongest survive.
Yeah, but it's still not a good average.
It's horrible. And then, you know, they get in the road and, you know, it was just, we live in a very, very rural area. So it's not like we have a lot of traffic or anything, but still, you don't want your birds in the road and they fly away from you. So it's not like you can just contain them. I mean, they go in their house at night, but beyond that.
Yeah. My neighbors across the street have decided that they like our birds being in their yard. They've started throwing them cat food and stuff.
Oh, well, they're going to have a bunch then.
Well, yeah, so our chickens and ducks are constantly crossing the road go over there, and I'm like, you're going to end up getting hit.
Well, there's a lot of, I mean, in our area, there's so many people that have chickens that are right next to the road, and I'm always like, we're going to get hit. We haven't had a problem. I don't even think we've ever had a chicken get hit in the road. Just the guineas.
Which is amazing, because the chickens don't move that fast, and they'll just stand there while a truck is coming.
The guineas will, like, roam a lot farther than the chickens. I mean, the chicken house is really not that close to the road at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's quite a long ways away from the road, but the guineas just really go far. So that's why we don't have guineas anymore. Because after that initial batch, we were like, no. this is just not a good plan. Oh, and the other thing that we didn't like about the guineas was they would attack the chickens.
What?
They would attack the chickens. Like, there was this one time there was a chicken that must have been sick or something, and it was kind of like all of the guineas, like, ganged up on the chicken, and they were trying to kill the chicken. So we had to rescue this poor chicken, so they can be really mean. So after that, I was like, no, this is the last guinea we're going to have, you know, bunch of have, because it just was not cool. I mean, I don't want them. I mean, especially, like, if you had chicks or something, the guineas would probably kill them.
Better to stick to peacocks.
Yeah, the peacocks are easy, actually, compared to the guineas. They're pretty intelligent for, you know, and they don't attack anybody. At least mine don't. I've seen videos of peacocks attacking people, but not mine.
Yeah, that would suck.
Yeah.
Those are big birds.
It's birds, exactly.
I raised my female from a chick, and I taught her like you would a pet bird, like step up, step down. Mm-hmm. So she would step on my arm, and as she got bigger, that was a whole lot more taxing. Yeah. 15 pounds of bird trying to sit on my shoulder. It's not cute anymore.
And you wouldn't want her pooping on you, that's for sure.
Or trying to play with my hair.
Yeah. Our peacocks are not scared of people, but they're not overly friendly either. But they will follow you around for food. I mean, all the birds are like, are you got food now? You got food now? You know?
Yeah. I don't know whether we're ever going to get Archer back or not. It makes me sad. But it makes me not sad because, like, at some point I had to just let it go.
Yeah, you really, I mean...
Okay, if that's the life he wants, then okay. That's fine. I paid a lot of money for him, but, you know, whatever.
With peacocks, it's hard because you have the choice of you can keep them in a pen forever, and they're really big birds, and then, you know, they'll live a long time, but then they're never really getting to do peacock things.
Right.
Or you can let them go, and, like, we're lucky in that we, like I said before, live in an extremely rural area. But we also live in kind of like a valley, so things stay pretty contained, right? Like, so we're like in a T-shaped valley, and our house is like the center of the T. So, like, you know, they're not really going to go that far any direction.
Because they can't really see anything that's better than what they have.
Yeah, it's not like Kansas, you know, where they can see. So they just pretty much stay in our little valley. And especially now that there's three of them, they just do their little peacock thing, hang out, and then they sleep in the trees, which a lot of people would say that that's not safe. But honestly, in my experience, it's almost safer than the chicken house, because if they get in a chicken house and there's something that gets into the chicken house, but in the trees, there's basically, I mean, they basically can't get killed unless... I really can't see what could kill them that being that big. We don't have any predators that are going to go up in a tree like that in the middle of the night. I mean, a coyote could kill them, but they're not going to get up there.
Maybe.
So.
If a raccoon got a jump on them. Well, and raccoons will hunt in packs. So if a raccoon could, like, corner it in the tree before it woke up.
That's true, but we've never had that happen. They tend to live a pretty long time doing that. I mean, that one, the one that we first got, he survived in the woods for how long? I don't even know. I don't know where he came from.
They blend better than you think they would.
Not so much the white one. You can see him like a sore thumb. Hence why they're not wild, white and white. But yeah.
So you're going to Steel City Fiber Festival in April, which is in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Yep. For people who want to go, it's a wonderful show. This is only its second year, but the first year was really great. So, and it's in a neat, I don't know how to even describe it. It's kind of like a flea market, but nice. It's like in this building. It was like an old set of factories or something. I don't even know what it originally was. And it's got this big room that we have the Fiber Festival in, but then there's also like antique stores and like comic book stores and a giant sewing store and all these other like really quirky businesses like inside of that building. So it's
and
really,
they're all open at the same time?
All open at the same time.
Awesome.
So, I mean, even if somebody's got a family that wants to bring people that aren't interested in fiber, they probably can find stuff to do, because it's really, it's just a quirky, cool, like independent business, like shopping mall.
That's cool. I'm going to definitely do it next year.
Yeah. So hopefully it'll go well this year and everybody will be happy. So far, so good. I mean, it was really great last year.
And you'll be at Kentucky Sheep and Fiber. Yay. I'll see you there.
Yes. Yes, I will be there. I like that show a lot too. Seems like the distant future from now, but it's not.
It's really not. And you're doing Middle Tennessee Fiber Festival.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's probably the furthest one that I go to. That is far for me. But yes, I will be there.
How far is wool gathering?
That one's about 7.
Yikes.
Yeah.
But Shenandoah Valley is like right at your back door, right?
Well, in Fiber Festival terms, it's about 3 hours away. I mean, I live in the middle of nowhere, so but I am kind of centered as far as fiber festivals go, so that's kind of nice, at least for, like, between the East Coast and Kentucky and Tennessee.
And you do SAF. SAF's pretty far for you, too, isn't it?
No, actually, that's not too bad. It's about 4 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, anytime it's not over 6, I'm happy.
Yeah, right? Anytime you don't have to stop overnight to get there.
Well, I try to avoid that really hard, because it adds a lot of time and a lot of expense.
This is more for my own curiosity, although I'm sure some people will also be interested. How did you take the step to go big?
Well, I don't really feel like I'm in big.
I mean, like SAF and Middle Tennessee, like those are pretty big shows. You're at some...
I'm still like a one person business, so I don't really feel like I'm that big. I'm just busy. I mean, I don't know. I guess I got into SAF when SAF was still not impossible to get into. Like, I think I got into SAF my first year that I applied as a backup person. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they called me like the day before the show or something like that. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't really feel like I made a conscious decision there. You know, I was just kind of like, if I don't have a show, if I don't have something planned on that weekend and there's a show, I'm going to try to go to it.
Mm-hmm.
So that means I go to a lot of shows.
So you didn't have like a certain amount of stock in your shop and you were like, okay, now it's time.
Nope. I just did it.
Good for you.
I mean, where is that line? You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like I have as much stock as I could cram into my van and I go. Mm-hmm. I do try to only go to festivals that I feel are worth it for me.
Right.
But most of them are. I mean, there's been very few that I've thought weren't worth it, but people have different standards. So I like to go to shows. It's a way that you can get out there and have people, you know, see your stuff and you get to meet people. And I get sad when I don't get to do shows.
Right. I like being at home and being by myself. But then I like also knowing like, oh, these opportunities are coming up and I'm going to meet a bunch of people.
You know, it's kind of addictive, to be honest. I like to travel and I like to drive. So I don't mind that part of it, even though it's exhausting. And I really like talking to people and doing all that kind of stuff and seeing what people have made and their shows
are
just
going to group therapy that somebody pays you for.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
Like, all of the people there share my addiction, and they're going to pay me to be there and talk about it.
It's like group therapy bookended by, like, lots of physical hard labor.
Well, yeah, there's that. But that's what makes everything else worth it.
Yeah, it's like the reward. It's like the cream in the middle of the Oreo.
I have to give a shout out to your peacock sock. Your colors are particularly gorgeous.
Thank you.
And I enjoy the names that you chose for them.
That is my number one most popular yarn of all time.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Is it the yarn itself or is it the colorways?
I can do the colorways on any of the yarn.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the peacock sock has 460 yards, and it is a very nice fingering weight yarn in that, I mean, it's smooth, it's not splitty, it has really good stitch definition. I mean, it's just kind of all-around go-to yarn, plus it's got so much yardage. It's got 25% nylon, so it makes a really nice sock. It's just all-around really good yarn. I mean, it's like the staple of my line.
And it's so pretty.
Yeah, it's really nice, and it dyes really nice and really clear. I can't say enough good things about that.
What has been your experience dyeing cashmere, out of curiosity?
It dyes a little bit lighter, but it's not too bad. It's not like silk. I like dyeing cashmere. I used to have a base Diva sock, which had cashmere component to it, and it makes for a fuzzier yarn.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as people like understand that, there's such a big difference between like the peacock sock and the Diva. And right now my main cashmere yarn is cashmere silk and alpaca, which is our whisper yarn. And that is like divine. I mean, it is like holding a baby kitten up against your skin. It is like, it is the best, most pretty yarn, but because there's no wool in it, you can only use it for projects that are drapey and not stretchy,
mm-hmm.
because it's not going to have any bounce to it. But I mean, cashmere, as far as that goes, it responds fairly much like wool, but it is going to be fuzzy. And it's like, I had somebody come up to me last show and they were like, I've used some of your yarns and I've noticed that the Diva sock tends to get a little bit more fuzzy, and that, well, that's because the cashmere is a really short staple length, so it's gonna stick out a little. I mean, you're not right. gonna be able to avoid that.
Everybody knows cashmere halos. That's how you can tell it's cashmere.
Yeah, exactly. But some people don't understand that.
Well, they need to go to yarn school.
It just depends on what your expectations are for the yarn. Soft and fluffy versus wears like iron.
Because I deal with wool so much, I expected cashmere to take up the same way. And I had the hardest time getting it to take and hold evenly.
I haven't had so much of a problem with that, but I also haven't dealt with yarns that are like a huge quantity of cashmere.
Oh, see, mine were 100%.
Yeah, see, that's a different story. I've never actually dyed 100% cashmere yarn. I've never gotten my hands on it.
I've done it.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that would be really cool.
I just made my own.
that would be really fun. I could see that because it's consistency is not the same as a wool. For instance, right now we're dyeing Blueface Lester.
Ooh.
And I'm seeming to feel like that is, although it dyes really clear, it doesn't uptake it as well as the Merino. Do you know what I mean? I mean, there's just, because I think, you know, the scales on the wool are just more coarse. And I imagine that's sort of similar. Not that BFL is anything like cashmere, but, you know, like the structure of the hair.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm totally just guessing on that, but but that's my theory anyway.
Well, it's a good theory. It's as good as we have.
Silk is the one that really throws your dye pots off.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's completely different than everything else.
I mean, I guess by now, like, you've got a specific formula or you've worked with enough fibers that you know what to expect. But do you still allow some give and take in the colorways? Because I find that's a large part of dyeing, at least on a smaller scale, is just kind of giving over to whatever colors come along.
Well, absolutely. I mean, because the thing of it is you're never going to be able to be 100% predictable unless you're working in like a lab, right? Where everything is exactly the same all the time. Because, I mean, even the amount, like, we live in the world's most mineral-filled water area here, right? And I used to dye only in rainwater, but I kind of had to give that up as I started dyeing more yarn. And
you didn't have your neighbors collecting for you?
No, we get a lot of rain here in Southwest Virginia. So, but when I moved into the studio, that really wasn't practical anymore. So I've been dyeing. And, you know, even just the mineral content of the water is going to make a difference of what your dyes end up looking like. And also the dye that you get from the factory is not always going to be the same. So you You have to embrace that, because if you're going to be like, oh my God, this one is 1% less red than the other one, you're going to drive yourself crazy. I will say that what does drive me crazy is, since I do so many highly variegated yarns, getting them to match can be really a tricky thing. But, you know, I would get bored. Honest to God, if I was doing nothing but dyeing really super predictable colors, I would be bored and I wouldn't do it anymore. Because, I mean, it's fun to, like, get surprises.
And so do you get your surprises through the colorways that you already have, like, that are listed? Or are you always looking for new ones?
Yes, both of those things. Because you're never quite sure how something's going to turn out. And you can make a mistake when you're dyeing, and then it's different. Somebody will come up to you and they'll be like, hey, I bought this yarn from you 5 years ago and I don't have the band anymore. And can you match it? Do what we can and see how you can do it. I had one time recently, somebody brought a yarn to me that she swore was mine, but I swear it was Madeline Tosh. I'm telling you, not my yarn. It was not my yarn. And my helper, she was like, that is Madeline Tosh. I'm like, yeah, I don't think it's my yarn. But we went with it. We tried to match it as closely as we could. It was just like a light yellow, so it was not like some kind of crazy colorway, but it wasn't even our base. So it was really hard. I was like, I'm going to try to guess which base of mine this is going to be closest to, because this isn't my yarn.
Do you just order blanks of whichever breed you want, or do you request blanks from people? Like, I want this blend of fiber.
As far as the types of yarn that I dye?
Yeah, like, do you ever get creative with that and, like, call some provider and be like, I want 75% Polworth and 10% nylon? And
well, that would be very cool to do. The thing that I have to think about is consistency over time. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard for me, because I've done this before. Like, if I get farm yarn, like, from an alpaca farm or whatever, it's hard to market that over time, because I have to know that I can get that for a long time, like for years. Because if I just do a little bit, by the time I've promoted it, I can't get it anymore. I have a yarn club, which is really awesome. If I have special things like that, I'll tend to send that to my yarn club, and then they get extra special yarn, because that way I don't have to worry about this supply being consistent for a long time. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Yeah. So it's like a one-of-a-kind one time.
Yeah, it's like a one-of-a-kind. Like, we did a one that was superwash merino silk and cashmere, which was really nice. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to carry it in my line. I thought it would be fun just for them to have it. So we did, you know, a special run just for that. But I mean, I'd love to work with more farmers. It's just really hard, because, you know, a lot of times they're really small farms. And when I buy yarn, I mean, I just bought 200 kilograms. So, like, you know, it's a lot. And I'm a small dyer. I mean, bigger dyers are buying it by the container load, you know.
Right.
I don't do that, but.
Okay. Your creativity isn't just limited to yarn or fashion design or costume design or anything. I don't even know how to segue into this. Tell us about the sheep wedding.
There's this scavenger hunt. I'm not sure if you've heard of it. It's called
Gishwishes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we did that.
We should explain, because not everybody knows.
It's the greatest international scavenger hunt the world has ever seen is the acronym. And it's a scavenger hunt that happens this year it was in August. I'm not sure if it's every August, but this year was in August. It's online and it's literally the whole world. And you have a team of like 12 people, I think 10 to 12, something in there. They can be anywhere in the world. So anyway, my friend came up to me and she was like, we're supposed to reproduce somebody's wedding photos using goats. And she was like, but we don't have any goats. So we were hoping we could use your sheep. So we like had this couple and their wedding photos with their dresses. And we were like trying to like figure out a way to like put fabric and flowers and stuff like that onto our sheep. And of course, there's only certain sheep in our herd that are even going to deal with this at all.
Right.
Like, so we have this one sheep that, the brown sheep, if you see the pictures, she's super human centric. And so she was like, yeah, we'll do whatever you want. I don't care. And we were trying to like get another sheep to be the groom and then another sheep to be like the minister. Which basically just meant we decorated up the girl, like, so she was all, and my friend was like being really particular. She was like, well, that guy's got black hair, so we need to use a black sheep. let's just figure out, like, who's going to actually do this for us. Because most of the sheep are looking at us like we're completely crazy, as they should.
I wonder what they're saying. You know, like, the brown one, I wonder if she's like, oh, God, those poor humans, they've roped me into this again. You know what? I feel so bad for them. I'm just going to go with it.
Yeah, she's pretty much like that in, I mean, in person. She's like the old lady, right? So she's kind of crotchety. Just kind of like, ugh, all right, whatever.
And yet you managed to bedazzle her horns.
Yes, yes, she was very bedazzled and cute. It was really fun. And, you know, we laughed so hard doing that. It was so funny. And just as a follow-up, this year we actually had our own Gishwiz team. So if anybody wants to get on a team, let me know, because we need people for next year. You can be anywhere in the world as long as you're crazy and don't mind livestock.
That's your pitch. That's the pitch you make on the podcast. Not buy my yarn or go to my site or I have a special. Join my scavenger hunt team.
So this year we had to borrow a goat from my friend's farm. And we got this cute baby goat, and we had to take a picture of my husband in a boat with the goat eating green eggs and ham.
I would eat them with a goat.
That was a lot easier than the sheep wedding, I gotta tell you. The goat was just kind of like, okay, whatever.
Well, the sheep were like, is this legal? Do we have to abide by this? He's not even that good of a friend.
Yeah, it was so funny.
He burps a lot when he ruminates. It's gross.
Probably more like, that was my brother.
Yeah, right.
We get bored here in Southwest Virginia in the summertime.
This is what we do for fun. But I have to ask, did the original bride also eat her bouquet? They'll probably play it at their anniversary.
Yeah, I wonder.
It's like a running look back.
Just put one in there and see if anybody notices.
Did they kiss on command?
We tried. Oh, we tried so hard. We tried so hard. We were like holding food up in between them, trying to get our hand out of the way. Yeah, it didn't happen.
And then the bride ran off to graze with the minister.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I highly recommend the scavenger hunt. Really, really fun. Takes up a lot of time, though, I will say that.
Yeah.
Very labor-intensive scavenger hunt.
But it's for a short amount of time.
It's for 1 week, yeah. Well, it's actually a week and 2 days. But yeah, yeah. But man, you get to do some things you never thought you'd do.
And so, do you have your own Tour de Fleece team?
No, I would love to have my own Tour de Fleece team, but I'm so busy. I've done Tour de Fleece before just as a participant, of course, but I'm so busy.
So we could possibly trade off. Like, if somebody's willing to join your team, then you'll join their Tour de Fleece or something.
Well, that could be true, but I'm not a very good member of the team of the Tour de Fleece because I don't have time to do anything other than dye yarn.
My first year, I spun over 3,000 yards, finished yards, so I don't even know, like, in singles how much it was.
Well, it's a huge amount of time if you really want to do a good job. I mean, my problem is if I join stuff like that, like, I can't just, like, do a mediocre job. I'll be, like, spinning day in, day out, right? Like,
well,
so,
I'm a hand spinner, so that's what I do.
Yeah, I mean, I know other, like, people who sell their hand spun that participate in Tour de Fleece, so I wouldn't feel guilty about that at all.
Oh, okay.
I mean, because it's just, you know, it's motivating to get your stuff done. It's great.
Right. Well, yeah, that was the thing. It was like, okay, now I have a reason to keep doing this.
Exactly. No, that's great. No, I know plenty of people that do that and still sell their yarn. I don't think there should be if they really cared, they could do like a professional versus non-professional.
There you go.
But how are you even going to monitor that, right? Like, it's just have fun.
I'm the Peloton of hand spinning.
Yeah, exactly. As far as, like, other things with the website, we're doing self-striping sock yarn right now, which you can pick the colors you want. So it's kind of like design your own. So people can pick whatever two colors I think are going to look good together, and I'll dye them for you. My yarn is, like, dyed to order, so that gives me a lot of flexibility. I can dye any of the colors on any of the bases for you.
Mm-hmm.
However, that does mean sometimes I get backed up. So it is specifically dyed for you, but sometimes it might take a little bit of time. So be aware of that. But I try my best to get things out in a quick way. Trying to think of anything else that's exciting happening. I mean, I'll be at 8 million fiber festivals this spring. There's a calendar on my website.
Well, cool. So where can people find you and your yarns and pictures of this sheep wedding, etc.?
Well, we are on all social medias. We're on Facebook. We're on Ravelry. Of course, we have our website, which is www.unplannedpeacock.com. And we are on Instagram, which is unplannedpeacock. It's our Instagram handle. We're on Twitter. We even have a Tumblr blog, which it rarely gets posted to, but sometimes. And we're on Pinterest. So we're on, like, everything. Our Facebook is probably our most active. Did you hear about that quilting business earlier this year that had their whole trailer full of stuff stolen?
No!
They were all packed up after a quilting show, and they had the entire trailer stolen with all of these priceless handmade quilts in it. And they did find it, and it was like some kind of crime group that was stealing trailers, and then they were just taking all the stuff in their trailers and dumping it in like a self-storage. So they found all of this stuff that had literally just been dumped into this like self-storage building, you know, and they probably sold the trailer or whatever. I'm not sure what happened with the trailer, but so they did get their stuff back, but I don't know what kind of condition it was in because, you know, it was literally just dumped and these were like handmade quilts, you know, you can't just put them in a pile.
There are moments that are, you're wide open. Setup and cleanup is like a perfect example because you're trying to get set up as quickly as possible and everybody's moving in and out and there's chaos and you got to move your vehicle. So you're trying to go as quickly as possible and you only have so many hands. So you put stuff and leave it in the middle of your booth space and walk off and hope for the best.
Well, and you know, I never worry about the other vendors stealing stuff. They don't need to steal my yarn. They got their own yarn, right? But when you're in a booth and it's super, super busy, there's like 20 people in your booth and you're just trying to like manage it.
Right.
You know, and try to like talk to people and give good customer service. You get focused on a certain customer. You're not going to see if somebody steals something.
Exactly. I have a hard enough time telling kids to leave the lamb alone.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's something I couldn't even deal with that. That would be hard.
Yes. And this yarn is great for, excuse me, could you stop making him headbutt you? I'm sorry about that.
Absolutely. I mean, it'd be impossible to watch every little thing all the time.
It's kind of like waiting for the stampede in The Lion King.
Yeah.
Like you set up your booth and you're like, yeah, okay, it's going to be a great day. And then it's totally silent. And then you see a couple old ladies trickle in. And then all of a sudden, whoosh, and you can't think for like 6 hours.
Yes, but that's the way we like it.
Right.
This is the way we like it because we do not want to be bored during a show.
I've had one that I decided was not worth going back to, and it was, I did not break even.
Oof.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And it's just, it's one of those cases where it's been going on for a while, but it's kind of played itself out.
Uh-huh.
I don't think they have very good volunteer management.
Well, that can be a really hard thing because, and that's what people have to realize with fiber festivals, whether it's vendors or customers or whatever. It's like, these are all volunteers.
Right.
They're not making money. I mean, if you're mad at somebody because of something about the fiber festival, just keep in mind, they are all volunteers. Be patient.
Right. Be glad if you get your free coffee.
Exactly.
And if the 4-H kids come around to see what you want for lunch.
Yeah, that's a great thing when they do that. Love that.
Be glad you have a booth space.
Yeah, that's the truth too.
There's turnover, you know, there's turnover in everything. And there happens to be a festival in the same region a little bit earlier that has done better. They've just done a better job of kind of like running it and smoothing things out and whatever. So in the choice between the two of them, I picked the one that's busier because it was so boring to sit there for 2 days, spin and stare at the people across from me. I made really good friends with them.
That can be brutal. I mean, honestly, the only good thing is at least we all have crafts, right? That we can work on.
Well, I made more product.
Yeah, right. At least it's not like you're wasting your time, but it is expensive to go when you don't make any money.
Right.
I don't feel like I've ever had a show where I've really lost money, but I've certainly had a show or shows where I've just like broke even and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't go back to those shows because I can't afford it.
It's really hard, especially with the young ones. It's a gamble going in, and it's a gamble for them too.
Sure.
When they start a fiber festival and they're trying to get vendors and you're like, is this worth my money? Because I don't know what kind of attendance you're going to have. And it all comes down to how well the planning and executing of the festival goes, you know, advertising and stuff like that. But you want to support the new people like that, but you do have to weigh your own costs against it.
Yeah, you cannot go if you're going to lose money. I mean, or you won't be in business for very long. I mean, even like I did a show recently that was not a fiber festival. It was like a generalized crafting festival. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was really, really fun and I didn't lose money, but it had a really expensive booth fee. And I was like, this is not worth it because I can't do this whole show just to pay the booth fee.
You know, we try to keep our prices pretty standard across the board, like what you're going to see on our website or Etsy and at a festival. And I know a lot of people run festival specials, but if you see a price that is a little bit higher or a product that you think is, you know, maybe overpriced, do keep in mind that the vendor has to factor in the time of being there, the cost of travel to get there and back, any kind of like extras like electricity that is associated with their booth, the cost of the booth fee, the food that they eat while they're there because they're away from home, and, you know, the production that they had to put in to get to that point. And the advertising, you know, banners aren't cheap, banner stands, tablecloths, things like that.
It's so ridiculously expensive to go to shows. I mean, it's like every single year you have to replace stuff. Displays are expensive. Banners are expensive. I mean, I got a beautiful new banner last year. It cost, I don't remember, $200. It was expensive. I mean, because it was like one of those pop-up ones that has its own stand, not just like a hanging one. And, you know, I used it once and I like already had a scratch on it. And I'm like, oh man, this thing better last more than a year because I can't be buying a $200 banner every single year. You know, you can replace just the banner part. So it's not like it's $200. But still, you know, everything you buy, it's just one more thing that you got to pay for.
Right. And you have to have enough business cards and people want, like if you're going to put out some kind of trifold brochure, yarn bands, your racks to hang things on, your lighting, your actual lighting that you're paying the electricity fee for.
And that's one of the things I struggle with on a mail order side of things. I would love to have beautiful, pretty self, you know, printed packaging that is like all beautiful.
Who wouldn't?
Right? I would love to do that. But, you know, then I think, well, do my customers really want to have to pay $3 extra for every shipment? Because I can't just absorb that cost for a specially printed box. Because, you know, that is what you're paying when you order from a company that's going to, you know, have these beautiful packaging. Because it costs money for every box. It's like a buck and a quarter every, you know, just for that box and then any other extras or whatever.
You have to order a minimum amount.
Yeah, like a bajillion. Anyway. I mean, I use all recycled packaging materials when I send out my stuff, like not recycled by me, but they're actually made from recycled plastic. Mm-hmm. And I pay a little bit of extra for that because I feel like it's worth it to like try to save the planet instead of just throwing all this plastic all the time away.
You're such a hero.
Oh, yeah, right. I pay a little bit of extra for that because it's worth it. But when it comes to paying $1.50 to $2 per box, that to me is not worth it. Someone's going to have to pay for it or I'll go out of business, right? I mean, right. You can't just absorb it forever.
Yeah.
It's tricky.
Well, and we have to pay taxes. And if you're out of state, you have to sign up for a vendor thingy. Mm-hmm. And once you start thinking about it, there's like endless costs.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Is it worth it?
I don't know. I ask myself that. But I really do like the yarn. And I really do like going to shows and I really do like my business. It's just all the paperwork, but I'm sure any type of business, you'd have the same problems.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me this afternoon.
Sure, anytime.
It's been another noisy week here at Ballyhoo. We had two lambs born, one last Wednesday and one this Thursday, both white ram lambs, both singles, one to Popcorn and one to Cotton. So I'm a little peeved about that because usually these girls give me twins and of course we want ewes, not rams, but they're lovely and delightful and up and running around and at least they're happy and healthy. Moms and babies doing fine and we're waiting now for everybody else. I have a feeling they're plotting to all drop at once. Look for pictures on Instagram and Facebook. I have made some updates to the website. Our virtual shepherd program is in full swing. You can adopt any member of the flock this year, rams, wethers, and ewes included. Only sheep who are staying at Ballyhoo are included in the program, with the exception of lambs, because we don't know, of course, how they will turn out. So check that out at ballyhoofiberemporium.com. We got electric in the shop. Woohoo! I posted one video on Instagram. We're not quite done. There's some more outlets to put in and wiring the basement and getting a ceiling fan and putting up some very particular light fixtures that we're building. But I have lights. I have worked in there past dark. So many, many, many thanks to the Hubs for doing that. Everything worked right on the first try. The first time he flipped the switch, everything came on just the way it was supposed to. Because he's awesome. Eula turned one on the 29th, and she kicked into high gear with chasing stock. Now I have to get her a different collar that will shock her because she runs so fast we can't catch her, and she doesn't listen. She just wants to play, and it is play. She ran down one of the lambs, and I had to pull her out of the pasture. She wouldn't have heard it intentionally, but of course she is big, and they are small. So we can't have that. And this is common with livestock guardian puppies, their first lambing. Lambs are bouncy and look like toys, and they're puppies, and they just want to play. I also updated on the website how to sign up for workshops and events so that I know that you're coming and have all your information and know how much stuff to get, etc. So it's easier for everybody all the way around. Hooray! Work smarter, not harder, right? I am developing a shepherding course that will also be online, probably not until midsummer. Those will be downloadable videos and have attachments with printable information, etc. So I'll have like demonstration videos that you can download and stuff like that. Green Living Festival is next Saturday, April 8th in Somerset, Kentucky. I'll be teaching two classes, one on biodynamic shepherding and the other on raising wool sheep for profit. So come check it out. And if you miss that, of course, I'll be teaching a beginning fiber processing course here at the farm on April 22nd, and then a next level workshop at Kentucky Sheep and Fiber Festival. You can sign up for that at KentuckySheepandFiber.com. I debated a lot whether or not to approach this next subject. I think it's beneficial. I am a public figure, and it's weird because, you know, I kind of joke about, oh, I'm famous. People come up to me and ask me questions about the podcast when I go to festivals, which is really flattering and delightful. I'm like, how did you know about that? It's fun, but being a public figure means by definition that you're public, and I ran into some uncomfortability with that in the last week. If you're a private individual, you have the choice to lock yourself down, make it difficult for people to find you online, make it difficult for people to find you physically, and kind of be a little choosy about who you invite into your life and your space. If you are a public person, if you choose to make your life public, you give away that right, that anonymity. I guess I didn't really think about that. When I had that horrible experience happen at school a couple years ago, I knew that it was a distinct possibility that that person could reach out to me through Facebook, through my website, but I never thought that other people would make that same choice or that effort. It was a bit unsettling or disconcerting. When I reviewed my options, they were really run and hide or keep doing what I'm doing. And there are so many of you that are awesome that it outweighs the risk of the not so pleasant people. So first, I want to thank you, my listener base, for being supportive and being fantastic and generally being respectful of my space. And I would urge you, for people with greater celebrity, to be respectful of theirs as well. Just because people have a job that makes them available to the public or thrusts them into that arena, you know, don't badger famous people. I can only imagine that it's 10 times as obnoxious when they're actually famous as when it happened to me. A lot of famous people run their own Instagrams and their own social medias. So remember that they are people. Maybe this is nothing. Also, shout out to Lima Pop Shop. I am the exclusive provider of stitch markers, including a special set that was made just for the Shepherdess Shawl Kit. That's eco-friendly, hand-dyed, 100% cashmere, two skeins plus Brick Walker's shepherdess shawl pattern at the God Flocker. And now, four stitch markers, Swarovski crystal in accenting colors that are made for size 15 needles, which is what the pattern calls for. So get those while you can. They are available on the website and they will be available in person until they're gone. But once they're gone, that's it. So get them now. The pattern, however, will be available, I believe, on Ravelry, but I don't know when it will be launched. You'll have to follow Brick on Instagram to find out more. I think that's all the news. I need to scoot because I'm supposed to go to suture school this afternoon. Yay! And now it's giveaway time! I hope that sounded epic. I wish I knew how to put echoes on it or something. We're going to make it a little bit interesting. She told you all of her crazy unplanned pet stories, and I know you've heard some of mine, so now it's your turn. If you would like to be entered in this giveaway for a skein of yarn from the Unplanned Peacock Dye Studio, go on the show notes and give us your craziest unplanned pet story that has happened to you or someone you know. If you do not want to go to the website, go ahead and post your craziest unplanned pet story on Instagram and make sure that you tag Ballyhoo Fiber Emporium and Unplanned Peacock in your story. The winner will be selected next week and announced on next week's podcast, which I guess I'll tell you now will be an interview with Tom Keene. And we'll be talking about forage selection and why that's important. So make sure that you listen next week to see if you won. Send us your stories. Have a great week. And remember, spin everywhere.